and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, Malik Gray. He is the Health Program Analyst Supervisor, Education and Training Unit with the City of Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. And welcome.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me here today. And hello to all the good people out there in the Delaware Valley.
That's quite a mouthful to put on a business card.
Yeah. So for short, we usually say DBID, but that still doesn't help people. But it just goes to show you in terms of we are multifaceted in terms of the types of services that we provide, with behavioral health being the central piece that we work on.
Well, let's talk about the department here. And I do have a question. Sometimes I see behavioral health. Sometimes you see the term mental health. How is it just a matter of apples and tangerines, or are we apples and oranges? When why behavioral health here?
So they are very interchangeable. And if we were just saying, hey, which one can I use? We would say, hey, whatever you feel most comfortable with. But the word behavioral health encompasses just a little bit more than what mental health does. And so that is why we chose to have that a part of our name. And again, it speaks to just the various types of services that we provide around behavioral health. So for an example, typically you say mental health, people will often just think about some of the most common mental health illnesses. They'll think about depression. They'll think about anxiety. But what is also included in it when we think about behavioral health is substance misuse. Okay. Or someone who is living with a substance use addiction.
And I tried to emphasize the way it is spelled. The disability services fall in your department as well.
Yeah. So we are very what we call strength-based in our approach to things. It's almost as if like we have special glasses and we want to share with everyone. And with those special glasses, we don't focus on the dis part. We focus on the ability part. And that we feel as though is what is most important when you're trying to help someone who is dealing with some type of challenge.
When we talk about our residents, and so if somebody presents with one issue, do you discover that it really is maybe just the tip of an iceberg, and that a substance issue might be hiding a mental illness, or there might be a disability issue that has not been recognized? Is that one of the reasons why it's such an umbrella term?
Yeah, there's that as well, in terms of what we refer to as comorbidity. When an individual is living with multiple behavioral health challenges or illnesses, and one thing can lead to another. And you just gave a perfect example when you spoke of substance use. We find that with a large percentage of individuals, they are using some type of drugs or alcohol to help cope with, say, depression or anxiety.
Is addressing it at the city level common in the United States? Or, I mean, let's talk a little bit about Philadelphia and how do we stack up against the other major metropolitan areas? Because one, we're older than most and we're poorer than most. So you're dealing with age and poverty thrown in here as well. So there's this great big wheelbarrow I just kind of like rolled down towards you. So go for it.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you. I always think of Philadelphia as the first of the first, right? We're the first to have this. We're the first to have that. And with that comes what I think is innovation. And even though we may be the oldest structurally and some other things or whatever, I think over the past couple, the decades or whatever, we really have expanded in terms of understanding, hey, we can't do this all by ourselves. So really pulling resources from other places, right? It's like, don't reinvent the wheel. Hey, someone over here has learned how, hey, this is how we can make the wheel better. But by pulling those things in, and typically we're talking about those experts, those people who are doing the work in other places, we say, hey, come over here to Philly, or we go to them and we learn about it, and then we bring it back here and we implement it. So we are always about what is in the best interest of our Philadelphians? We know it's not a cookie cutter system. So what might work in Boston or what may work over in Minnesota may not work exactly here in Philadelphia. So we know, hey, we got to tweak it so that it fits our citizens.
And so are you saying we are kind of a first or?
Yes. I own that. Yes. My commissioner's going to come after me for that. But yes, we are. Because one of the things I feel as though that helps us stand out is we listen. We listen to what the individuals who are in need are looking for. No different than, let's just think about when you go to the doctor. When you go in the doctor's office, for the first couple minutes, the doctor is just listening to you. Not saying, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that or whatever. It literally is saying, hey, Laura, so what's been going on with you? And you know, and I think in taking that time to listen, then you're able to kind of be laser focused with what you know that particular person needs, right? It's no, let me switch it around another way. You could be living with depression. I'm living with depression. But in terms of what will help us, it's different things that will work for us. So I may want to, you know, do journaling and riding a motorcycle. You may want to do rock climbing and something else in terms of some of your self-care. So really individualizing is one of the key factors.
Is this a collaborative where you're working with multi-departments? Because when you mentioned self-care, that implied care. So what's the process?
And this is the best way to sum it. We are the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. And for us as an agency, we know that we can't do it by ourselves, right? So we're not wearing this superwoman or Superman cape. We know that it's all about working with the plethora of private organizations out here that have been providing these type of services in their individual areas. So it is working with them and really helping, giving them the tools or increasing the amount of tools so then they can go in and do the work that they do day in and day out. They're really the ones who are really in the trenches. I mean, we get in the trenches too, but they have an expanded knowledge, meaning they know their areas better. And it affords us then to be able to stand back, provide some oversight, know when, hey, you know what? It's almost like being a general. It's like saying, okay, you know what? We need to bring in some more forces. All right. So then it's us being able to tap into other city organizations, right? You talked about homeless, right? So we're maybe tapping into our homeless department and saying, hey, you know what? We want to do X, Y, and Z with these particular provider organizations. So we really help in terms of kind of moving those government pieces that will then support these community-based organizations in Philadelphia.
I love that you just said community because that is where I was just about to go. By working with these organizations that are placed in the neighborhoods, it allows community-based responses. And no two communities are necessarily the same here in Philly.
Yes, yes. Philadelphia is so unique. So unique. I mean, I know some people who have never even been to the far Northeast. They're like, what is the far Northeast? Is that like Jersey or something like that? No, that's actually Philadelphia. Again, this is where it's about understanding what works in Kensington may not work exactly in, say, a far Northeast or a West Philadelphia. So, again, it's about listening to the people in that area, working with those community-based organizations and providing them with the services and resources to allow for individuals to get the help that they need.
Well, I'm not a mental health, expert, but I do interview a lot, so I can pretend to be an interviewer here. And I've heard other providers or people have talked about the importance of being treated or receiving care or support in your own neighborhood or in your community. And especially with addiction services, I've heard a lot about why move somebody away when the support or the network is local. And is that part of all of this? Because I know that you've got programming where you try to create family or units around individuals as support.
Woo. You asked some good questions, Laura.
Well, in there, so, you just parse through that, and eventually you'll get to something.
Yeah, no. So here's the thing that I find very interesting. Like I said, we have a ton of resources, and we often preach about that. Hey, you shouldn't have no problem getting help because we have this and that or whatever. But one of the things we don't put enough attention or give enough attention to is understanding, are they able to access those resources? Okay, or those services. So it's ever so important that in terms of trying to minimize the amount of obstacles, it's saying, hey, Malik lives in Germantown. Why are we sending him to West Philly when there's something right there in Germantown that's going to give him the same thing? He's more likely to be consistent because it's a neighborhood that he's comfortable with. OK, so that is one of the that's another important thing that, again, for us as an organization, as well as our community based organizations, that's what they're doing. They're understanding what is going to work best for that individual. Now, on the flip side, in some cases, the places where individuals are from, I'll use myself again, I'm from Germantown or whatever. Hey, maybe Germantown, you're from Germantown?
I'm a Germantown girl. Raise up.
In the house. Awesome. It's understanding, you know what? While Germantown is a great place, it's not really a good place for Malik because that is where his addiction started. Person, places, and things in that area are working against him.
Mm.
So there is where we say, you know what? Let's move him out of that area, right? Let's get rid of some of those external factors that are impeding or preventing him from getting the help that he needs or whatever. So we may say, hey, you know what? We're going to send you out to Roxborough, okay? Or we're going to send you to somewhere in South Philly, right? And understanding that we're making sure that, hey, is this a good fit for this person?
I know your office works with the other departments, and that does include juvenile services and the juvenile justice system. And it is building teams and recognizing that this is not a solo effort. And again, there was a question in there somewhere, but it's part of your innovative programming is what I'm talking about here.
Yeah. So I have a very good example, and we can go in more detail about what I'm about to talk about a little bit later, if time permits, hopefully it does. So I'm going to speak about a training that we provide called Mental Health First Aid. It's a training we've been providing for almost a decade now, and it's free to all Philadelphians. And I'll get into what that is hopefully later, like I said. But there's an example. There's a train. So that's a training that we provide to the public and to anyone in the Philadelphia area. And I'll talk about later for those who may not live in Philadelphia, how they can access that training in their specific area. But with the Mental Health First Aid training, we know that we can't provide that training all by ourselves. All right. So as you talk about the juvenile justice side, they're a good example. So we've worked with them for many years, and understand that particular department is under the Department of Human Services. And basically we said, hey, you know what? While it's been great us providing this training for you, how about we train your people how to do this training? So now you have in-house trainers. So then you can provide this training anytime you want to your staff, as well as the individuals that you are providing services with. Bam. Right. So now in terms of growth, in terms of what I refer to as the domino effect, it's just like this growth. It just keeps happening because we keep passing the baton. We don't have to do this all by ourselves. We don't want to do this all by ourselves. Again, city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. It's all about working together.
Well, you're very prescient because that's what I was going to ask you, because we're at the halfway point. And so here's where I say that this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we're talking with Malik Gray. He is Health Program Analyst Supervisor, Education and Training Unit with the City of Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. DBID? Is that the short?
You know, if we were on the street, we'd be like, yo, you going over to DBID?
No. You going to DBID? Well, you can reach DBID. It's real easy. Just go by. It's the acronym. DBHIDS.org. DBHIDS.org. And that's where you can follow them on social media as well. They are at DBHIDS. Yes, I was going to ask you about them. That was actually what prompted this whole conversation was I knew about the mental health first aid. And what it, and it is. It's beautiful. It's like planting a seed and repopulating a field with good mental health practices, or at least intervention or recognition and prompting conversation. So let's talk about this and who should be taking this, or who how do you spread this?
So to everybody. Everybody should take this training. Okay. I cannot say in one word in terms of how immensely useful this training is. Now, let me just throw this out there. No, this training will not set you up or turn you into a psychologist or a counselor. So don't think after you do this 8-hour training, like, hey, I have my certificate. Guess what? I now can treat people. The premise of the training is basically teaching people how to recognize the signs and the symptoms of a mental illness or problem, and then knowing what to do in the intermediate before professional help gets involved, or even or just deciding whether or not professional help is even needed at that moment, right? So this use for an example, I'm gonna go back to depression, right? There are what we, I guess I could say, levels of depression. There is the typical day-to-day, you know, we all feel down sometimes, right? Long day, all this work, family stuff or whatever. So we may feel what we will say is a little down, right? Next day, you know what? We got a new mindset. We're like, I got this. You know what? Laura's going to take over the world. I got this. All right. And all is well. All right. So that right there is not something where we would say, hey, you need to talk to a psychologist, right? Or you need to talk to a therapist. No, we may say, hey, Laura, what are your self-care techniques that you're using? Right. Just to, so that you're not constantly finding yourself in that space. Now, the next level is where it begins to really affect your day to day. That's when we really need to consider having some type of professional help. OK, and when we say affecting your day to day, it's or daily functioning, it's literally that your ability to get out of bed on time and do what you're supposed to do, taking care of your hygiene. What are your deterioration in your relationships and, you know, how you respond to people? Those are the things that this training teaches about what to look for, and then knowing what is that next step. And what is so one of the great things about the training is that it's easy to digest. So there is a I like to think of it as a tool that is given to everyone when they go through the training. And it's by using an acronym that is referred to as ALGEE, A-L-G-E-E. Okay, not the algae at the bottom of somebody's pool. Okay. And so each one of those letters basically is an individual tool of itself. So it's algae is the tool belt, and then each letter is your individual tool. So for example, the A, all right, that refers to assessing for risk of suicide or harm. So that and that you learn the use of that tool is about observing. What do I see? What do I hear? Right. In respects to someone who may be experiencing some type of mental health problem or crisis. The L, this is a good one. Listening non-judgmentally. I'm going to just let that just kind of float out into the universe. I want people to just kind of soak that in, because we think that we are listening, and 9 times out of 10, we're looking at the person. We're sort of listening, but we're either thinking about 50 other things, or we are turning our attention to other things from time to time. And so it's about understanding, removing, putting your, get rid of your biases and just listen, gather the information, show your presence that, hey, I'm just thinking about focusing on you, which then ensures that you really know what is going on with that person. The G, give reassurance and information. When someone is going through a really tough time due to a mental health challenge, it's letting them know you're not alone. I'm here with you. All right, we're going to figure this out. There are services out there. Okay. And then information, that goes back to when we talked about having access to services and resources. First E, encourage appropriate professional help. Keyword there is appropriate. Okay. It's just knowing that it's almost no different than a doctor. You go to a doctor and they may be a world renowned doctor, you know, all these accolades in there, but you go in there and their bedside manner just sucks. You're like, I can't be with this person. I don't know what this person treating me, right? So it's finding the person that fits for you. It's no different than dating. All right. And then the second E, encourage self-help and other support strategies. That hones in on what I've kind of been emphasizing, and that's about self-care. What are the things that we could be doing on a daily basis, right, to ensure our mental health wellness? Okay. So it's taking time out to go for a walk, read a book, do the things that make us happy. Right. But it's also understanding. And so I heard someone say this the other day. Sometimes we're often focused on just the happiness, and happiness, if you think about it, almost makes you think of something has to happen in order to make me happy. So don't focus so much on the happiness. And that's all great. You know, hey, you know, I get a new car. I'm happy for a minute. Right. Focus more on getting joy.
Oh.
Joy is just the, you know what, I woke up today. Yes, let's do this, right? Joy is just, wait, you know what? I'm feeling that sunshine. Whew. God, that's bringing so much joy into my life. The birds are chirping, okay? So doing that, those are all things that encompass, you know, what may make out someone's what I call self-care list. So I'm going to pause right there. I don't know if I need to throw the baton back to you.
I do want to bring up this point, too, while we're talking about this. Our company right now, we are in the middle of a campaign regarding family mental health. And this plays into this assessment part because you don't suffer alone. If one person has a problem in the family, everybody shares in it.
I like that the approach there, family mental health, because it we often just focus on the person that may be living that has the mental health challenge or problem, not realizing everyone is living with it. You know, even the person who's caring for that person or you know, is living with the illness to some extent. So what are the services or what is the help that they can get? That's a whole nother dynamic. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that again, this is where stuff can really escalate in terms of where I'm the parent, I'm the caregiver. I'm taking care of my mom and I'm taking care of my dad. You know, my dad has this mental health and my mom has this medical thing. And I think I got my Superman cape on. I got this. And then I'm not realizing, guess what? I'm not taking care of myself. I find myself being anxious all the time. I find myself, just feeling like the world is on top of me or whatever. And then before you know it, I'm in the hospital.
That's one of the things that this mental health training would help with, the assessment. How are you? Are you getting joy? And is this a stress that is affecting your ability now to cope?
Yep.
Well, we have more information about this at our website. So if you would like to learn more about our Beasley Best Community of Caring Family Mental Health Initiative, just go to the station website. But now let's get back to the mental health first aid. And is this age appropriate? I mean, is this age when you, and you know, you say that this is an 8-hour course. How do you administer this? And again, you're going to have somebody that you start observing and then you discover, this is a substance abuse issue. This is not necessarily mental health. Or does it work with all ages? And do you address the differences? Or are there differences between a kid, a teen, somebody who's more mature?
There are similarities, or as some would say, there is some overlap. But yes, there's a lot of differences. The training itself, there's several different versions of it. So the adult mental health first aid training is like the godfather of the training, right? It's what started it all, and that training is designed for adults 18 and older. Okay. Then there's the youth mental health first aid. So the youth mental health first aid training is geared towards those adults who care or work with young people 12 or older. And it really looks at the behaviors as well as the mental health challenges that we see specifically with young people, and just being able to differentiate between, you know, hey, it's just a teenager going through some growing changes versus, whoa, this child is self-isolating. This child is not interacting with his peers. This child's having problems with academics. Okay, maybe now it's probably something else more than just, hey, I'm just trying to challenge authority. So that's the youth training. And so while there is not a training specifically for all young people, there is a new version called Teen Mental Health First Aid that is only we're only able to implement that in a school. The idea is to get a large number of young people trained in it so everyone can kind of serve as kind of like a peer advocate for everyone. We piloted a few years ago with a local high school. And hopefully in this coming with this new school district, this new board and everybody under the sun, maybe we'll bring it back or whatever. But as I say that, in terms of getting the training, yes, it's 8 hours. We are providing it virtually. There is a 2 hour pre-work you do, and then there's 6 hours of an actual live virtual session. You can go to dbhids.org to find out more information about the training, or you could go to healthymindsphilly.org where you can also find out about how to get that training. For those who do not live in Philadelphia, because this we provide it specifically for those who work, live, or play. So if you fall in any of those categories, right? So even if you just come through to visit Philadelphia for a week, you can take the training. But if you just say, hey, I'm out in Minnesota, all right, California, somewhere, guess what? The training is there as well. You just need to go ahead and go to Mental Health First Aid USA and find the local organization that is providing that training. Okay. And if you have any problems, you can just always just email me and I will assist you. Malik.gray@philla.gov.
And I happen to have that website. If you are not in the Philadelphia area, if you're not in the Delaware Valley, it is Mental Health First Aid, all spelled out, .org. Mental Health firstaid.org. And that comes from the National Council for Mental Well-Being. Again, mentalhealthfirstaid.org. You know what? We are at the and past the 2 minute warning here. What is the takeaway from our conversation today? Bring us home.
So know that there is help out there. All right. And as someone said to me once, and it sticks with me every time, I am not my mental illness or challenge. Okay. These are things that we may have to live with, but they do not prevent us from being the best person that we can be. So seek those helps, seek those services and resources out there. Know that you're not alone and that there's someone who wants to help.
Here, I'm going to first say, if you're hearing this, wherever you may be, you can find resources and information at mentalhealthfirstaid.org. That's mentalhealthfirstaid.org. Wherever you may be, you'll be able to find the local organization or agency that offers these services, mentalhealthfirstaid.org. But for those of us fortunate enough to live, work, and play in Philly, you can always start with healthymindsphilly.org. As Malik said, it's a wonderful resource with lots of information. It's very easy to navigate, healthymindsphilly.org. And of course, you can always go to DBID, and that is very easy to find. Again, it is just, think about it, what it is. It's an acronym, D-B-H-I-D-S, D-B-H-I-D-S, or Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services, DBHIDS.org. Follow them on social media at basically the same thing, at DBHIDS. What? Okay, here we go through this title again. Here we go. My guest today, Malik Gray, Health Program Analyst Supervisor, Education and Training Unit with the City of Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. And Malik, thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura. It was truly a pleasure. You're awesome. You're awesome. And I just want to say, as I'm chuckling, when you say DBH IDS, it reminds me of a former commissioner that we had, David Jones, who's out in Chicago now. He used to always say we're like a smooth jazz station when he would say DBH IDS. And the way you just said it just hit the ball out the park. Like,
well, I'm going to say it again. Again, go to dbhids.org. Malik, thank you very much. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.